Picture this. You are the admitting pediatric resident meeting Justin, a 12-year-old boy with sickle cell disease who comes to the emergency department with his mother. He tells you that he has pain in his lower legs, upper legs, and arms. 2 days prior to this visit, he developed a fever, cough, and sore throat, and then slowly developed the crescendo pain in his extremities. He has had no trauma. "I'd say this pain is about average for when I've come to the ER before," he says. His examination is remarkable for a temperature of 100.6 degrees Fahrenheit and increased work of breathing. Justin's hemoglobin is low at 10.5 grams per deciliter, and his reticulocyte count is markedly elevated at 22%. His oxygen saturation is 88% on room air. His mother is tearful, explaining that this is his third hospital stay this year. "It's okay, Mom," Justin reassures her. "I know they'll get me feeling better soon." You reassure Justin and his mom that you are going to treat his pain. But you also discuss that his oxygen saturation is low and he has a fever, signaling a potentially dangerous complication. As you listen and learn about sickle cell disease, think of what condition Justin is at risk for and how you plan to treat him. Welcome to Audio Bricks. I'm Laurel Toft, bringing hematology from our bricks to your ears. After completing this section, you will be able to 1. Define hemoglobinopathy and sickle cell disease, the most common hemoglobinopathy. 2. Describe the pathogenesis of sickle cell disease. 3. List and understand the characteristic complete blood count values in sickle cell anemia. 4. Describe and identify the morphologic changes present in the blood of a patient with sickle cell anemia. And 5. Describe the typical clinical course and treatment of sickle cell disease. Sickle cell disease affects millions of people worldwide, causing debilitating pain, infection, organ failure, stroke, and premature death. Although the mortality rate has decreased over the past 20 years, a staggering 90% of children with sickle cell disease in resource-poor countries do not survive to adulthood. As improbable as it might seem, given the scope and magnitude of suffering for which it is responsible, sickle cell disease is caused by a single point mutation in a single gene. The gene involved encodes a critical portion of hemoglobin, the oxygen-carrying molecule in red blood cells. Although there are many similar diseases of red blood cells called hemoglobinopathies, sickle cell disease is the most common and a great example of a disease which we can understand from the genetic basis all the way to its impact on real people and societies. Let's get started. Part 1. What is a hemoglobinopathy? Hemoglobinopathies are inherited diseases in which there is a mutation in one of the globin chain genes in the hemoglobin molecule, either alpha or beta. Usually the problem is a point mutation, and usually it's the beta globin gene that's affected. Sometimes the mutation is, quote, silent, meaning that it doesn't cause any noticeable change in the way hemoglobin functions. In many cases, though, the mutation results in a beta globin chain that doesn't function properly, leading to hemoglobin dysfunction and patient symptoms. Hundreds of different hemoglobinopathies have been identified, but the most common one is sickle cell disease. Part 2. What is sickle cell disease? So what's a sickle anyway? It's actually a farming tool with a C-shaped blade that is used for cutting grain. It was also famously used in the Soviet Union hammer and sickle symbol. Sickle cell disease is so named because of the shape of the red blood cells, also called RBCs. Normally, red blood cells have a characteristic shape of a biconcave disc, which resembles a donut where the center is shallow instead of a punched-out hole. In sickle cell disease, the RBCs have been contorted into a semicircular sickle shape when looked at under the microscope. And now that we know what a sickle is, let's discuss the cause of sickle cell disease, also called SCD. Dust off your basic biology knowledge because we're going to take it back to codons and amino acids. Buckle up. Unlike some multifactorial diseases, scientists have pinpointed the exact genetic cause of sickle cell. SCD is caused by a point mutation, meaning single base change, in the gene that encodes the beta globin subunit of hemoglobin. At the sixth position in the beta globin gene, the GAG codon that normally codes for glutamate, a hydrophilic or water-loving amino acid, is mutated to GTG, which codes for valine, a hydrophobic or water-hating amino acid. The mutated beta chains combine with normal alpha chains, forming a hemoglobin variant designated hemoglobin S, or HbS. Recall that normal adult hemoglobin molecules, which consist of two beta chains and two alpha chains, are designated HbA. This seemingly tiny change has huge implications in lower oxygen states, which is the crux of the clinical manifestations of SCD. Part 3. How is sickle cell disease inherited? SCD is inherited in an autosomal recessive pattern, meaning a person must inherit two mutated beta chain genes, one from each parent, in order to manifest the disease. People who inherit only one mutated beta chain gene are carriers of the gene and are described as having sickle cell trait, SCT. Although patients with sickle cell trait do not express the full range of symptoms seen in sickle cell disease, they may experience some, including hematuria, blood in the urine, and renal papillary necrosis. So in this sense, we can also think about the gene as being sort of co-dominant, because carriers will have some normal RBCs in circulation and some with the mutated protein containing valine at position 6. Time for a knowledge check-in. Question: what is the probability of passing on either sickle cell disease or sickle cell trait from two parents with sickle cell trait? The answer is: if both parents have sickle cell trait, there is a 50% chance of each parent passing the trait on to a child. The chance of a child inheriting two copies is 50% of 50%, or 25%. The chance of a child inheriting one copy of the gene is 50%, since they can get the gene from either parent. So, the total chance of a child inheriting either the trait or sickle cell disease is 75%. Part 4. Why do RBCs sickle? Remember that hemoglobin has two stable conformational states. The taut or tense state is in conditions when more oxygen is needed in the tissues, such as low oxygen, high carbon dioxide, low pH, and high 2,3-bisphosphoglyceric acid, 2,3-BPG. The other state is relaxed, when there is high oxygen, low carbon dioxide, high pH, and low 2,3-BPG. An easy way to remember taut versus relaxed hemoglobin is to think that you would also be stressed, or taut or tense, if you had low oxygen. An easy way to remember is which factors shift the hemoglobin dissociation curve to the right is with this mnemonic: ACE, BATS, right-handed, acid, CO2, exercise, 2,3-BPG, altitude, and temperature. So let's review that. Which factors shift the hemoglobin dissociation curve to the right? We use the mnemonic ACE-BATS right-handed. Okay, so normal hemoglobin, whether taut or relaxed, floats freely in the intracellular fluid of the RBC. The hemoglobin in sickle cell disease, HBS, however, does not. In HBS, the mutated beta-globin chain has a valine instead of a glutamate at position 6. When HBS is in the taut or tense state, this valine residue is exposed. And because valine is hydrophobic or nonpolar, the HBS molecules line up or polymerize with the valine residues facing inwards to shield them from the polar environment. This process results in the formation of long, inflexible strands of hemoglobin that contort the red cell into the sickle shape. Conditions that promote sickling of RBCs are the same conditions that favor easier unloading of oxygen in the tissues and the, quote, taut state, including elevated temperature, elevated carbon dioxide, also called hypercapnia, and low pH, also called acidosis. These are the same factors that shift the hemoglobin dissociation curve to the right. Part 5. What happens when red blood cells sickle? When RBCs sickle, they lose their flexibility, and this causes significant problems. The rigid sickled cells get trapped in the small vasculature of the reticular endothelial system of the spleen, as well as in the capillaries throughout the body, leading to blockage of blood flow through these small vessels. Sickled cells are also more fragile than normal RBCs and are removed from circulation at a faster rate by splenic macrophages. Normal RBCs circulate for approximately 120 days, compared with only 10 to 30 days for that of a sickled RBC. Because of this shortened lifespan, patients with sickle cell disease may become anemic. We call this sickle cell anemia. Time for a knowledge check. Question. What are the conditions that would make RBCs more likely to sickle? The answer is hypercapnia, or increased carbon dioxide, acidosis, also known as low pH, and fever. Part 6. How can we test for SCD? Another flashback to undergrad bio. Remember gel electrophoresis? Well, that's what we use to detect the abnormal hemoglobin in sickle cell disease. In gel electrophoresis, denatured proteins are loaded into wells in a gel, and an electric charge is applied. Based on their size and charge, the proteins migrate differently through the gel. Hemoglobin electrophoresis works the same way. A small sample of the patient's blood is loaded onto the gel, and after the electrical charge has been applied and the proteins have migrated, the gel is stained to visualize the proteins. Normal adult hemoglobin, HbA, with two normal alpha chains and two normal beta chains, migrates to a specific position on the gel, relatively close to the anode. Sickle hemoglobin, HbS, with two normal alpha chains and two abnormal beta chains, migrates to a lesser degree, finishing in a position closer to the cathode. But why does HbS stay closer to the cathode? Incredibly, it boils down to that single amino acid change. The normal beta globin chain has a glutamate at position 6, but the sickle beta globin chain has a valine instead. Glutamate has a negative charge, and valine is uncharged. This seemingly tiny alteration in charge is enough to keep HbS from migrating to a position further from the cathode. The electrophoresis tells us not only if HbS is present, but also whether the patient is heterozygous, meaning one normal beta chain gene and one sickle beta chain gene, or homozygous, meaning two sickle beta chain genes. These differences account for whether the patient has sickle cell trait, if they're heterozygous, or sickle cell disease, if they're homozygous. Aside from this direct diagnostic tool, other lab values are abnormal in SCD. The complete blood count shows a normocytic anemia, which is decreased hemoglobin and hematocrit, and normal mean corpuscular volume, or MCV. The reticulocyte count is typically increased, signifying the bone marrow's attempt to compensate for the increased destruction of red blood cells. A number of important findings are present on a peripheral blood smear. The first and most obvious are the sickled cells, appearing like crescent shapes in contrast to the round shape of the normal RBCs. Howell-Jolly bodies are also commonly seen in patients with sickle cell disease. Howell-Jolly bodies represent small remnants of DNA that normally are removed by the spleen. But in the absence of splenic function, as is usually seen in patients with sickle cell anemia, they remain in RBCs and are visible as small, deeply basophilic blue spherical inclusions inside the RBC cytoplasm. Time for another knowledge check-in. Question. What findings would you expect to see in a complete blood count of a patient with SCD? Answer is, the patient would likely have a low hemoglobin and hematocrit. Part 7. What are the complications associated with SCD? Sickle cell disease is a painful disease, and patients' lives are markedly impacted. Ask a patient with SCD what is the worst or most difficult part of the disease, and they'll likely tell you it's the pain crises. Pain crises are exactly what they sound like, episodes of excruciating pain that often require hospitalization for IV pain medications to manage them. Pain crises are thought to be caused by sickled red blood cells getting trapped in small blood vessels, also called a vaso-occlusive crisis. There are no lab tests or vital signs aside from the pain level that make the diagnosis of vaso-occlusive crisis. And this, unfortunately, can lead to healthcare providers disbelieving patients with sickle cell and inappropriately labeling them as drug-seeking. Undertreatment of pain is a significant problem for patients with SCD. But on the other hand, patients with SCD can become narcotic dependent as they attempt to manage their pain long term, and this can lead to a host of other side effects and complications. Vaso-occlusion can lead to ischemia and pain in any vascular bed. Let's examine some of the complications due to vaso-occlusion. A potentially deadly complication is acute chest syndrome. This crisis includes at least two of the following: chest pain, fever, pulmonary infiltrate, respiratory symptoms, or hypoxemia, low oxygen. It is a significant cause of hospitalizations and one of the most common causes of mortality. Acute chest syndrome is often triggered by infection, which leads to inflammation and oxygen desaturation. This, in turn, worsens sickling, causing more vaso-occlusion, leading to a vicious cycle. Another important complication due to vaso-occlusion is avascular necrosis of the hip. Vaso-occlusion in the long bones, particularly the head of the femur, leads to infarction of the bony trabeculae and avascular necrosis. This causes pain often in the groin or when bearing weight on that leg. Avascular necrosis often requires surgical intervention such as core decompression or even total hip replacement. Vaso-occlusive events also commonly occur in the kidney and the lungs, leading to chronic renal insufficiency and pulmonary hypertension if patients live long enough. Over time, repeated vaso-occlusion can also damage the spleen, leading to functional asplenia. Functional asplenia occurs at a young age in patients with SCD. So when examining a child with SCD, we might expect to feel an enlarged, palpable spleen known as splenomegaly. But usually by teenage years, the spleen will become shrunken and involuted. Asplenia puts patients at an increased risk for infections, particularly with encapsulated bacteria that normally would be cleared by splenic macrophages after opsonization. Particularly concerning are bacteremia and sepsis from encapsulated bacteria such as Streptococcus pneumoniae, Haemophilus influenza, and Neisseria meningitidis. This means it is super important to vaccinate patients with the meningococcal, pneumococcal, H influenza type B or MPH vaccines. Patients will often receive prophylactic penicillin during childhood to protect against the pneumococcal pneumonia. In addition, patients are at increased risk for osteomyelitis, commonly due to salmonella. A helpful way to remember these organisms is the mnemonic SHINS, S-H-I-N-S, Streptococcus pneumoniae, Haemophilus influenza, Neisseria meningitidis, and Salmonella. Part 8, how do we manage the disease? Management of SCD includes treating anemia, preventing pain crises, and also managing pain crises once they occur. Anemia is often treated by supplementing with folic acid. Folic acid is an important cofactor for DNA synthesis. In an SCD, the increased hematopoiesis will consume high levels of folate. Supplementation will provide adequate folate for this increased utilization. In some cases of chronic anemia, transfusion is required to keep hemoglobin above a threshold to prevent complications. But transfusions are not free of risk. Even with careful cross-matching of blood, patients who require chronic transfusions can develop antibodies against donor blood that puts them at risk for future transfusion reactions. Chronic transfusions can also lead to iron overload, so it's important to appropriately select patients for transfusion therapy. Hydroxyurea is the most common drug used for the treatment of SCD. It works by increasing the amount of fetal hemoglobin, or HbF. HbF is different from adult hemoglobin because it has two gamma subunits instead of two beta subunits. The different structure is not subjected to the mutation and will therefore increase the number of normally shaped RBCs in circulation. Hydroxyurea has been shown to decrease the number of pain and acute chest syndrome episodes. However, it also reduces the number of leukocytes and may be carcinogenic. It is particularly associated with increased risk of leukemia. Avoiding pain crises is a primary goal for patients with SCD. Lifestyle modifications such as avoiding dehydration, high altitude, and overly strenuous exercise can help prevent these crises. Antibiotic prophylaxis and vaccines also play a major role in preventing infections. In cases of pain crisis, the first line of treatment is hydration and analgesics, often requiring hospitalization. Acute chest syndrome may also require supplemental oxygen and empiric antibiotics. In severe cases, an exchange transfusion can be done to remove sickled cells and replace them with normal donor RBCs. This is particularly useful in acute chest syndrome, stroke, and priapism. Bone marrow or stem cell transplants can potentially be curative, but are considered only for patients with severe SCD complications. Part 9. Is there a benefit to having sickle cell trait? You may wonder how sickle cell trait has been passed to so many people when sickle cell disease causes illness and premature death. Well, interestingly, the geographic distribution of sickle cell trait in Africa historically has correlated to the geographic distribution of malaria. Turns out, patients with sickle cell trait have some protection against malaria, which is a parasitic infection of red blood cells. We aren't 100% sure why this happens, but there are some theories. One theory is that the parasite that causes malaria decreases oxygenation within the infected RBC. This will cause the cell to sickle and then be cleared by the spleen, thereby limiting the parasite's ability to replicate in the host RBCs. Time for one more knowledge check. Question: what is a possible mechanism for the protective effect of sickle cell trait against malaria? Answer is: parasite infection is thought to decrease oxygenation in RBCs, which promotes sickling and removal from circulation. And that's it for sickle cell disease. Let's check your knowledge and see what you've learned today. First, what causes sickle cell disease? Sickle cell disease, the most common hemoglobinopathy, is caused by a single amino acid mutation, glutamate to valine, which causes HBS in the taut state to polymerize into long, inflexible chains. Now, describe the pathogenesis of sickle cell disease, specifically what happens to the red blood cells and how this leads to clinical symptoms. In SCD, red blood cells containing the hemoglobin variant HBS take on a sickled shape due to the long, inflexible shape of the hemoglobin. These sickled cells get trapped in capillary beds, leading to vaso-occlusive crises. Sickled RBCs also get cleared by the spleen and therefore have a shorter lifespan than normal RBCs, leading to anemia. Next, how is sickle cell disease diagnosed? SCD is diagnosed with gel electrophoresis, but sickled red blood cells can also be seen on a peripheral blood smear. Next, describe circumstances that lead to increased sickling of red blood cells and therefore symptoms. Symptoms worsen when cells sickle due to low oxygen, high carbon dioxide, and low pH or acidosis. Other circumstances that worsen sickling include altitude, dehydration, and infection. Now, what are some clinical complications of SCD? Complications include asplenia, painful vaso-occlusive crisis, acute chest syndrome, infection, and avascular necrosis of the hip. Next, how is anemia treated in SCD? Treatment includes folic acid for anemia and hydroxyurea to increase HbF concentration because fetal hemoglobin is not susceptible to sickling. Occasionally, anemia is treated with transfusion. And lastly, how are pain crises managed? Management of pain crises includes hydration, analgesics, and potentially exchange transfusion. And we're done with this episode on sickle cell disease. Armed with your newfound knowledge, let's think back to the patient from the intro. A 12-year-old with sickle cell disease presents in pain crisis, but with the worrisome symptoms of fever, anemia, and low oxygen saturation. You are concerned that his presentation is beyond the typical sickle cell pain crisis. What is the diagnosis, and what treatments are available to Justin? You diagnose Justin with acute chest syndrome, one of the potentially deadly complications of sickle cell disease. You inform Justin and his mother that he needs to be monitored closely. A chest x-ray reveals bilateral pulmonary infiltrates, confirming the diagnosis of acute chest caused by vaso-occlusive crisis in the lungs. Over the next 2 days, Justin receives aggressive hydration, IV pain medications, supplemental oxygen, and empiric antibiotics. Thankfully, his condition improves with better oxygenation and control of his pain. Justin does not require exchange transfusion, and his hemoglobin level gradually increases. He is transitioned to oral pain medications and discharged home, having escaped without developing the deadly complication. You reflect that the road ahead is long for this patient, who has already been dealing with pain crises for most of his young life. And that's all for our show. If you like this episode, send us a comment or give us a thumbs up. Until next time.